Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with D.C. area jazz woodwind player, arranger, and big band leader, Scott Silbert. We caught up with him to talk about his latest 2022 CD called Jump Children and his life in music. On this album, he assembled a swinging crew that recreates those days at ballrooms like the Savoy, the Palomar, Roseland, and a dance hall anywhere. Prior to joining the Navy, he performed at Disney World for 9 years. Then he joined the Navy Commodore's Big Band back in 1991 on the baritone sax. And then it was in 1998 that he became the chief arranger for the United States Navy Band. And for 15 years, he was there until he retired in 2017. He's got a great story. Enjoy.
Thanks for taking a minute out. I really enjoyed Jump Children.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet, man. So as we kind of get into this album, you know, it's obviously coming out during the tail end of this 2 years of no live music, and this seems like an album that you would want to play and promote live. So how does it feel to have it come out right now?
I'm just very happy that it got out. The timing really worked out beautifully that it came out when it did, and that we were able to record it, you know, coming off of, like you said, 2 years of not playing and not having any jobs or not having any concert opportunities to perform for dancers or in concerts. We were just coming off of, the vaccine had just started coming out and people were starting to feel a little bit safe about it, you know, and I just thought, well, this is the time to do this, you know. And for me, it was really more about a celebration of having COVID behind us, you know, in kind of in the rearview mirror at this point. But also for me, like, be able to get together with my friends and see them after, you know, some of these folks I had not seen in over like a year and a half and or more, and just to get them all together in one sitting and play music, that for me was the best part of the whole thing, was that moment where people started showing up for the rehearsal and seeing them again. It was so much joy. So that's what it was really for me, was it signifies, you know, that the terrible couple of years, they're in the rearview mirror now, and we're moving forward, and we're making music again, doing what we can do, you know, doing what we love to do.
You know, the one thing that reminds me of this time, whenever we, you know, and I think about my generation and how old I am and the adversities we've gone through, I don't know that we've gone through anything this magnanimous. I mean, I think about the Greatest Generation coming out of war, and I think about this album being kind of a triumphant revival kind of a thing, like, you know, hopefully we're getting back to it. And that's what happened after World War II. You know, there was this influx of jazz that was getting people to move. What are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
I hope that when someone puts this on to listen to it, that people who love jazz will listen to it and say, okay, well, this is good because it's swinging. I deliberately chose big band selections and tunes from that era that weren't, you know, beaten, that had not been done to death. You know, I didn't want, you know, the world does not need another recording of In the Mood or Take the A-Train, as great as those are. So I deliberately went off the beaten path and pulled things that were not as familiar. So for a jazz listener, they could put it on and say, wow, that's a good big band. It's swinging. It sounds like fun. You know, there's some great soloists on there. So wonderful musicians in every chair. But also for people who like to swing dance and people who like to dance, that they'll say, like, hey, push the sofa back, roll up the rug, let's dance, you know, let's put this on and do some dancing. So I was kind of looking at marketing it as not just a big band, you know, a listening experience, but also that people could put on and dance to. Because I really, really have grown to love working with dancers or playing for dancers. The swing dancers from, you know, from that era, the big band era, it's really a lot of fun to do.
So during this time of lockdown and quarantine, we've all had moments of self-realization and reflection. What did you realize about yourself that maybe you didn't realize before that's going to make you a stronger organism as we all reemerge and promote a new album?
I think the one thing, because everything stopped so fast, like gigs were disappearing like overnight, and the first thing I thought of was like, well, we're like you alluded to earlier, we're kind of living in like in a period of history, because, you know, this is like the Spanish influenza epidemic of the early part of the 20th century and World War II and the Great Depression. Well, we're kind of living through this now. So the first thing I reminded myself was like, okay, I need to keep playing because I need to practice for a mental health aspect. I just love having the horn in my hands and playing. But I also thought, like, I need to keep my chops up so when this is over, that I will be able to have my, I'll be able to play again. I won't have to take 2 or 3 months building my face back up, you know. So what I did really was just start diving in and immersing myself, because I had a lot more free time, with practicing and then with transcribing big band music, and just really devoting myself to being more of a, like, improving my skills as a musician. And this was before I even thought about doing the CD. I just kind of jumped in. I thought, okay, this is the time to incubate and get better while I can, you know, because everything stopped. And I'm not the only one. This is happening around the world. So I just want to stay healthy and be a better musician for when we go around the corner from this.
Before the Navy band, you were a part of Disney World for 9 years. I always hear that's wonderful exposure. It's a pretty great gig. So talk to me a little bit about, even before we get to that point, growing up, how did you get involved with jazz? How did all of this kind of begin for you?
I was raised in a very supportive family, but there were no musicians in our family. And my mom and dad are of an age where they had like some cursory knowledge about jazz and popular music. You know, they were both like huge fans of like Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and Andy Williams. They had great taste in music, and being that they were from Philadelphia, they had been exposed to some jazz bands and some dance bands in the Philadelphia area. But I had no idea about music. I just thought, when I got into middle school, they said, would you like to play an instrument? And I said, well, I'll join the band. I'll play the clarinet. Tried that for a little while, but then I discovered the saxophone, and like immediately I became infatuated with it. And I knew when I was in the seventh grade that I was going to be a musician somehow. I just loved it so much. I said, well, I just got to do this for a living. So I kind of had my career choice made up for me at that age. And this is when we were living in Orlando, Florida at the time. I just jumped into the deep end of the swimming pool with music as a kid, and just that's all my life was when I was a kid. And as I got older, you know, we would go to Disney World and we would see musicians performing there in all a variety of settings. Like there were some jazz things, there was some Dixieland, there was a marching band, there was all everything. And I thought at the time, wow, the greatest gig in the world would be to work at Disney World as a musician. You know, this is like when I was in high school. And a couple of years after high school, I managed to get, you know, they needed some saxophone players out there. And I, you know, I had word of mouth, people knew who I was, and I got hooked up and I started working there. And I did that for about 8 or 9 years. Yeah. And it was a great gig, mostly because I got to work around really great musicians. Orlando still has a lot of great, you know, phenomenal musicians down there. But back in the 70s and 80s, it was really, there were a lot more jobs. And I got to sit next to so many great players. And that really was my college education, was to work and play with these folks. Because I'd keep my ears open and my mouth shut. And I would just learn from them just by being in their presence.
What was the first live jazz show you saw that really blew you away?
Wow. Let's see. The first, there were two immediately that come to mind. One of them was Spyro Gyra. Back when, this has had to be back in like maybe 1980. They had just come out and they had appeared in Orlando. They were doing a lot more straight ahead. They had a few commercials. I think they had done Shaker Song. That was one of the early hits. And they did that as the concert, but they did a lot more straight ahead jazz. And that just kind of, I was like, wow, these guys are really good. Like, cause I just envisioned them doing like pop, like, you know, like Shaker Song and tunes like that. But they got into, they did St. Thomas and it was, you know, all hell broke loose at one point. It was like really intense. But I think the other one was seeing like Maynard Ferguson's big band when I was a kid. And just, you know, when you're in middle school and you hear that band, it's like, that's like a life-changing experience. It's because it's so, you know, it's loud and it's brassy and there's Maynard playing way up into the clouds with those high notes. But he always had good bands. It was very entertaining. It was just very exciting So I would say, yeah, like maybe Maynard or Spyro Jar were like the first real jazz concerts that I saw.
Well, you spent a lot of time in the Navy band. Talk to me a little bit about the time in there and how that really groomed you to be who you are today as a musician.
Well, I came into the Navy band in 1991, and I had auditioned for and won a position in their jazz band, which is known as the Commodores. And I came in on second tenor saxophone. And after a couple of years, I eventually moved down to the baritone saxophone chair, which I really enjoy playing the baritone a lot, especially in the big band. But the most important thing that happened to me when I was in the Navy band was I started doing some arranging. I started, because I was always been fascinated by people who arrange music and the people that write charts. And I just thought, here I am with this great band. If I write a chart, I can bring it in and take like 5 minutes at the rehearsal and they could maybe play it and I could get to hear it. And even if they never play it again, I'll get to hear it. It'd be like a learning, a workshop experience for me. So I just started going home and writing, I would go home and write charts and I'd bring them in and they were like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's play that at the next concert. And I was like blown away because I had very little experience with writing. I just did it more and more and more because I just enjoyed it so much. Just arranging tunes that like things that I like to hear or whatever. And then after about 8 years in the Commodores, there was an opening on the arranging staff for the Navy band. And I auditioned for that and I got that position. But that arranging staff position was strictly writing for concert band, like a 40, 50 piece concert band and choir, like a vocal choir and any genre of music from Bach to Michael Jackson. I had to write all sorts of different things. But it was a great skill to learn because it made me a much better arranger. So when I retired after 26 years, I'm still playing a lot of jobs as a saxophonist, but I'm also doing a lot of arranging for all sorts of different ensembles. And I enjoy doing it as much as I enjoy playing.
So what do you like the best about being a professional musician, being involved in the world of music? What is it that motivates you every day to wake up and to get involved with it?
Well, it's funny you put it that way too, because I still get excited. I mean, I've been doing this since 1983. I still get excited driving to if I get a gig, I still am like, yeah, I'm going to get my suit on. I'm going to get my horns. All right. I'm all set. I still get excited going to gigs. And, I think what excites me is that it's still a lot of fun. It's just fun to show up on a job and see my friends who I love to work with, and we just get to make great music. And I'm like, boy, how could this be any better? And I get to work with some really phenomenal players, and also that I'm doing the kind of jobs that I enjoy doing. For many years I would do wedding bands and playing top 40 tunes and all that, and that's great. I did that. But now I do a lot of jobs where I'm just playing the music that I'm really comfortable playing, like swing era music, jazz, swinging jazz kind of stuff, mainstream kind of music. And it's still, I still love it. I still get excited about playing those gigs.
So let's say we get off the phone, a jazz DeLorean pulls up. You can go back in time and see anybody in the history of jazz live. Who are you going to go see? Where are you going to go?
Oh, my God. Wow. There are so many people. I think if we had the time machine, I'd want to go back to Chicago in the 1927, 1928 and hear Louis Armstrong, hear Louis Armstrong somewhere live. I would start with Louis, but then I would say, like, let's go see Sidney Bechet. Let's go see Bird. Let's go see, Jay McShann. Let's go see Basie with Lester Young. there'd be so many people I'd want to see, but I think I'd have to start with Louis Armstrong just because he is the foundation of it all. And I would just love to see him at that period.
If you have a dream tonight and you run into a younger version of yourself before you were starting to play and get really into gigs, and you could give your younger self one piece of advice based on wisdom you've gained over all these years, What would you tell yourself?
Wow, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what I could tell myself where I would want to maybe approach things differently, or it would be maybe something like, don't be afraid to take chances. But I'm so delighted and so happy and so fortunate to where my life is, where I've come in my life, that I don't know if there'd be anything. You know, I would probably tell myself, okay, don't sell that Selmer Mark 6 baritone sax. That would be the first piece of advice I tell myself. But don't sell that baritone sax. That was a really good horn. Other than that, I can't think of anything.
So, very simply put, why do you love jazz?
Oh, wow. That's a hard one to... It's hard to describe because it's coming from my heart. I love jazz because it's some people could say it's about freedom, and it's about, you know, it's expression. And that's true. There's so many different facets. You could talk to dozens of different jazz musicians and ask them this question. I'd be curious as to what they would say. For me, it's just joy. It's when I can sit with my friends and play my horn and communicate and have like a little coming together moment and make something happen. Or when I put on a recording that I love, like if I put on Duke Ellington recording or Zoot Sims or Lester Young, and it just feels there's an air of familiarity and warmth and comfort. It's very comfortable. And I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but it really comes down to like just something you love. There's love in there somehow for me. But that's a tough one to answer. That's a tough one to answer.
Well, this next one's not going to be any easier, and it'll be my final question. I want to know this. Everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans. But ultimately, you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
I think what's been great about getting older is that as you mature, my journey has been all about discovery, about honesty, being honest with myself, being honest with the world. I think of myself as like, I try to live by being a good guy, treat people with respect, everybody, treat everybody with respect, treat everybody with kindness and love. And let them know through my passion of music of who I am. You know, I think that's one of the things that has helped me in my career as a musician. I'm not all that talented as a musician. I mean, I do work very, very, very hard at it every day. And it's a passion. It's like you know, you probably know some musicians who are like, they're just naturally very talented at it. And I'm not. I just love it so much that I just want to be, I want to sound like I'm naturally talented at it. But I think that vibe, people can sense that. Like they can maybe see that I'm a nice guy. I can kid around, but I can take care of business. But I'm also, you know, I'm a very serious musician, and that this means the world to me. And I want to make it better all the time. I want to make the music in one way or another, try to help out and improve it.
Right on, man. Scott, hey, thank you for opening up. Thanks for taking a minute out for the show. Good luck with the album and hopefully the return to the stage as the year goes on.
Well, thank you, Joe, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And anytime, I would love to do it again.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Orlando, Washington, D.C., Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Scott for his time, music, and energy. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.